the totality of the beliefs, the belief in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Day of Judgment, in Revelation, is the same among them. Inshallah, next episode we talk about some other aspects of faith and the narrative of Quran of human history. Inshallah, I hope you join me in the next episode. Thank you very much for listening. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. صلى الله على محمد صلى الله على النبي صلى الله على محمد وعلى آل النبي. The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Rocket fire from Gaza. Palestinian fighters carrying out an unprecedented offensive with thousands of rockets. Sirens sounding across Israel, including Tel Aviv and outlets. Israel is being attacked ferociously. This was by far the biggest operation by resistance groups against Israel in decades. We decided to put an end to all the crimes of the occupation. Their time for rampaging without being held accountable is over. We announced Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, and we fired, in the first strike of 20 minutes, more than 5,000 rockets. That was the announcement by the Ezzedine Al-Qassam Brigades, the military wing of the Hamas resistance group. Armed clashes along the separation fence with Israel near the southern town of Khan Yunis were reported to take place. Fighters seen here breaking through the fence. The mood, however, was different. The head of Hamas's political bureau is seen celebrating the operation, carried out not only by Hamas fighters, but by all the resistance fighters in the Gaza Strip. Such was the case at the Jenin refugee camp. Israel has declared a state of war alert, striking back, setting the stage for a new heavy war. Hamas fighters are seen inside an Israeli military camp, which shows the shock surprise of Israeli army. Here, Hamas fighters are seen with a captured Israeli military vehicle. This is a large operation including all Palestinian resistance groups in the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank, namely Hamas, PFLP, the Ezzedine Al-Qassam Brigades, and the Islamic Jihad movements. In the occupied West Bank, the Lion's Den is also active. Israeli towns are on fire, like Rehovot in southern Israel, and Ashkelon seen burning after resistance rockets landed there. So dire the situation, Israelis were forced to hide in trash bins. Meanwhile, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are looking for cover, while sounding defiant when it comes to Israeli regime forces. Israel is finding itself on shaky grounds. Even though it has mobilized reservists, there are shortages since reservists, along with pilots, have refused to take orders due to its so-called judicial reforms, which is why this announcement by Netanyahu may fall on deaf ears. Our enemy will pay a price, the type of which it has never known. That was a statement from Netanyahu. The surprise offensive that Palestinian fighters executed against the Israeli regime is a natural outcome of what Israel has done with Palestinians over the decades. Hezbollah summed it up best. This was a decisive response to Israel's continued occupation. However, Hezbollah also added this to its statement. This is a message to those seeking normalization with Israel. A clear reference to Saudi Arabia, which is said to be in talks with Israel for, quote, normalization. Ever since this extreme cabinet came into power, it has violated Palestinians on a daily basis. Not that previous Israeli officials did not do that, but this cabinet has done it at warp speed. Which puts into question why Saudi Arabia would be interested in pursuing a, quote, normalization. Any normalization with Israel would be a stab in the back of Palestinians. Just the other day, Israel announced that it will legitimize the killing of Palestinian citizens in new open fire rules. It said the new measure seeks to allow officers to use live fire against Palestinian protesters. Al-Aqsa violations, Israeli incursions, injuring and killing Palestinians. All of this in the face of the silence by the international community. How much longer could Palestinians endure this?
As the war drags on in Ukraine, signs are emerging that do not bode well for the U.S.-led coalition against Russia. Just days ago, the Slovak Social Democracy Party, which is a pro-Russia party, won the country's parliamentary elections. The leftist Smeristy Party, led by former Premier Robert Fico, has not secured enough votes to form a government and needs to form a coalition with other parties. But the victory has been interpreted as a sign of growing war fatigue in Europe. The party's leader has said that no more weapons would go to Ukraine. He has also questioned the logic of the EU's Russia sanctions and even accused NATO of causing the war.
I believe that on the one hand, yes, we should expect certain, let's say, uncomfortable relationship between Brussels and Slovakia. But then on the other hand, I also think that the relationship will also be rather pragmatic. However, the danger is real when it comes to Slovakia's declining support to Ukraine. And this will also have its impact to weaken the EU's unity when it comes to its support for Ukraine.
Just weeks ago, Poland, a staunch ally of Ukraine, announced that it would no longer supply weapons to its neighbor amid a diplomatic dispute over Kiev's grain exports. Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki has said that Poland's focus was instead on defending itself with more modern weapons. The country's president later tried to modify their stance, but the dispute is seen as a rift among members of the anti-Moscow alliance. Poland has supplied hundreds of Soviet-era tanks and 14 MiG-29 fighter jets to Ukraine and served as a major transit hub for weapons from other Western nations. These developments have stirred talk of a global shift in sentiment towards supporting Ukraine as the war grinds on. More than a year and a half after it began.
It is full of Ukrainians here. This is what I seriously do not like. They get benefits, energy costs went up, everything went up. So basically, they are getting benefits, and we, our citizens, we pay.
The money spent on the war in Ukraine has unnerved many citizens in European countries. Days ago, hundreds of people staged rallies in different German cities to vent their anger at Berlin's growing support for Ukraine. Many protesters carried banners and placards advocating for peace in Ukraine while expressing opposition to government policies, including the remilitarization of Germany. Demonstrators said Germany's decision to send more weaponry to Ukraine risks escalation of the conflict with Russia. Some protesters demanded that Germany pull out from the NATO alliance. Some said the United States is benefiting from Germany's intervention in the Russia-Ukraine war. Germany is among Western countries that have provided Ukraine with a wide range of weapons since the war erupted in February 2022.
I'm mainly concerned with crisis intervention and resolving this armed conflict on the one hand. On the other hand, of course, there are trends in the militarization of Germany. After all, from a purely political point of view, Germany is right in the middle, and America is shamelessly taking advantage of that too, using citizens through media policy to perhaps ultimately use them for their own goals, and Ukrainian citizens were also exploited.
The German economy has suffered due to crisis in Ukraine. It tipped into a recession at the start of the year and stagnated in the second quarter. High inflation, industrial slowdown, and reduction in global demand for manufactured goods have all been weighing on the German economy. And earlier in October, dozens of anti-war activists in New York City said that the interest of NATO depends on the perpetuation of imperial capital and extraction of wealth from the dispossessed.
Unification of peace forces in the United States, recognizing that it's the United States and NATO who are are to blame and the fundamental cause of the conflict in Ukraine, and that if we can force the U.S. government to stop sending money and weapons to Ukraine, the war will end the very next day.
A poll conducted in August said most Americans oppose Congress authorizing additional funding. Overall, 55% say the U.S. Congress should not authorize additional funding to support Ukraine versus 45% who say Congress should authorize such funding. And 51% say that the U.S. has already done enough to help Ukraine. The removal of Kevin McCarthy as Speaker of the House of Representatives has added to the uncertainty around aid for Ukraine.
Kevin McCarthy has been ousted as Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives in a brutal, historic rebellion by far-right Republicans. The rebellious GOP lawmakers, furious at his cooperation with Democrats, have accused him of a string of broken promises. This is the first ouster of a Speaker in the House's 234-year history.
On this vote, the yeas are 216, the nays are 210. The resolution is adopted. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table. The office of Speaker of the House of the United States House of Representatives is hereby declared vacant.
I mean, it's a sign, I think, if history is any guide at all to this, it's a sign of a party in disintegration. I mean, that's what's happening. And it's melting down, and that's pretty clear. That's the older history. The more recent history, I think, is that what we're seeing today is the latest installment in the, you know, ever continuing coup d'etat by Donald Trump. I mean, that's what we're seeing.
The vote to oust McCarthy marks a major escalation in tensions for a House GOP conference that has been mired in infighting, and it comes just days after McCarthy successfully engineered a last-minute bipartisan effort to avert a government shutdown.
That I think probably the next step would be a shutdown, which is really what they're probably aiming for. They wanted to get McCarthy out of there in part because he stood in the way of that. Bunch of reasons, but that's part of it. And it's the politics of chaos.
The effort to oust the Speaker was led by GOP Republican Matt Gaetz. There is also a significant amount of distrust and anger from House Democrats towards McCarthy over his actions as Speaker and the House GOP agenda. The rebellious lawmakers accused McCarthy of a flip-flop, saying he had promised an end to hastily prepared stopgap legislation hammered out with the support of the opposition and a return to budgeting through the committee process. Some Republican leaders condemned McCarthy's removal, with former Vice President and current presidential candidate Mike Pence suggesting it would undermine the GOP in the eyes of voters. There is no clear successor to oversee the House Republican majority. Congress has just over 40 days to agree on a deal to avoid another potential government shutdown.
But there is a certain nihilistic quality to what they're doing. However, there is also, you know, genius in the madness, because the madness is about creating as much chaos as possible. And then, you know, then the Trump people will step in.
Speaker Kevin McCarthy's ouster could signal a shift in the U.S. House of Representatives on aid to Ukraine, with some of his possible successors staunchly opposed to assisting Kiev. Republican opponents of the aid view it as excessive spending and a misplaced U.S. policy priority.
I rise to put the leadership of the House, the Senate, and the President of the United States on notice. I will not consent to any expedited passage of any spending bill that provides any more American aid to Ukraine. It's as if no one has noticed that we have no extra money to send to Ukraine. Our deficit this year will exceed $1.5 trillion. Borrowing money from China to send it to Ukraine makes no sense. It's not as if we have some sort of rainy day fund sitting around, trillions of dollars in a pot of money, and we're just going to send that to Ukraine. We're going to borrow it. When we borrow it and create new money to pay for that borrowing, we create the inflation that is plaguing our economy.
McCarthy earlier this week denied accusations by Gates that he had cut a secret deal with Biden to allow the House to vote on Ukraine aid. McCarthy said then he wanted more information from the Biden administration. President Joe Biden asked Congress in July to approve another $24 billion related to Ukraine. Although the compromise struck in Congress dropped new fundings for Ukraine amid opposition from hardline Republicans, it remains unclear what might happen next. Biden and his Democratic Party say the U.S. has a duty to help Ukraine.
And why it's critically important for the United States and our allies that we keep our commitment. We can support Ukraine in the next tranche that we need, and there is another means by which we may be able to find funding for that, but I'm not going to get into that now.
However, the issue has become so politicized in Washington that the fate of vital military aid is now in jeopardy. The U.S. has approved four rounds of aid to Ukraine, totaling about $113 billion, with some of that money going towards replenishment of U.S. military equipment that was sent to the front lines.
Since the beginning of Russia's war in Ukraine, the American taxpayers provided Ukraine with $113 billion. Over the 583 days of war, between February 24, 2022, and the end of the month, that averages $6.8 billion per month, or $223 million per day. There's a lot of things that we need to fix in our country before we borrow money to try to perpetuate a war in another country.
There are also widespread concerns over corruption in Ukraine. The U.S. is increasingly urging Ukraine to do more to combat corruption. This is while Ukraine considers the direct budget support it gets from the U.S. and other foreign allies to be vital to keeping its economy afloat.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu Alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, we're welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Farahzad. Stay tuned.
در روایت داریم یک کافر قتال کسی که کارش آدم کشتن بود.
In the narrations we read that once a cruel, arrogant killer was passing by Prophet Muhammad and his companions. One of the companions asked Prophet Muhammad, "You said that there is no absolute devilish power in the world, but what is the goodness in creation of a cruel killer like this person?" Prophet Muhammad answered, "The person who fights this unbeliever and kills him will go to the heavens. And if a person will be killed by such a person, again he will go to the heavens." We read in the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Furqan, Ayah 31, "That is how for every prophet we assigned an enemy from the guilty, and your Lord suffices as helper and guide." By enemy in this ayah, we can bring the examples of Nimrud, Pharaoh, and many other unbelievers who were notorious during the history. Therefore, assigning enemy even for the prophets had many blessings in the way of their spiritual perfection. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Farhasad. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. We welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program. Shaykh Karimi is the guest speaker for today's discussion from the Islamic House of Qom to answer today's question. Assalamu alaikum, Shaykh. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
Okay, Shaykh Karimi, for today's discussion, we want to talk about the imam of congregational prayer. Is it possible for a woman or a lady to lead the congregational prayer, especially for men?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is one of the Islamic laws related to prayer, and we have at least three scenarios in Salatul Jama'ah, in the congregational prayer. Sometimes all the people who are called ma'mum, I mean people who are following the imam,
yes,
all of them are men. Sometimes we have both men and women, and sometimes we have only women. So for the first two scenarios, I mean when the ma'mumin are men, and both men and women, according to both Shia and Sunni scholars, in that case, the leader, the imam, can be only a man. And a woman cannot be the leader for these men or both men and women. For example, the Sheikh Najafi, the author of Al-Jawahiri, says, يشترط في الإمام الذكور الذكورة إذا كان المأموم ذكرانا أو ذكرانا وأناثا. If the مأمومين are men or both men and women, then the imam should be a male. فلا يجوز إمامة المرأة لهم بلا خلاف أجده نقلا وتحصيلا. So in that case, a lady cannot lead the prayer, and I have not found any person who disagrees with this ruling, as if it is ijma, consensus of all the scholars. We see the same among the Sunni scholars. For example, one of them writes, وَمَنْ شُرُوطِ الْإِمَامِ أَذْذُكُورَ. One of the conditions for the imam is that he should be male. إِذَا كَانَ الْمُقْتَدِي بِهِ رِجَالِ. If the ma'mumin are men, then the imam should be a man. فَلَا تَسِحُ إِمَامَةُ النِّسَاءِ. In that case, women cannot lead the prayer. And of course, it is based on the narrations in this regard. For example, in Sunni sources, we read, لا تأم امرأتن رجلا. A lady cannot be the leader of the prayer for men. And Imam Ali alayhi salam is also quoted as saying, لا تأم المرأة الرجال. When the ma'mumin are men, then the imam cannot be a lady.
Yes.
And the other point that, technically speaking, in jurisprudence, it is another argument to show that women cannot be the leader of the prayer when the ma'mumin are men, or both men and women, is that according to the narrations for the place of Salat, in Salatul Jama'ah, congregational prayer, women cannot stand before the men.
Yes.
Or next to the men. There should be, they should be usually behind the
some men. Steps backward,
exactly,
yes.
Exactly, some step backwards.
Yes.
Or with some distance or with some curtains in between. So these narrations also prove that the lady cannot lead the prayer for men, because in that case she's in front of the men. And the third argument mentioned by the Muslim scholars is the seerah of the Muslims. I mean, when we read the history of Islam, you cannot find any example in the history of Islam in which in any Islamic land, a lady has led the prayer for the men. No, we do not have any example in this regard. Of course, unfortunately, in our time and era, yes, we see some examples, but they are not based on the narrations, both in Shia and Sunni sources, and the seerah, the conduct of the Muslims in the whole history of Islam.
Can a lady lead a prayer for the ladies or not?
Yes. So what I mentioned was for the first two scenarios, yes, when ma'mumin are men or both men and women. When it comes to women, if all the ma'mumin are women, then according to the, when it comes to Shia scholars, the majority of the Shia scholars believe that in that case, the imam can be a woman.
Yes.
So yes, a woman can lead the prayer according to the ruling of the majority of the Shia scholars if the ma'mumin, if the people who are following her are also only women.
Yes.
Now, having said that, some may ask that why a woman cannot lead the prayer for men or for both men and women. And especially nowadays, as I mentioned, we see in few mosques, in some especially Western countries, when a lady is the leader, is the imam, and behind her we have both men and women following her. And it seems that it is a version of feminism penetrating into yes. these Islamic and Muslim communities.
Yeah, some deviated groups, for example, believing... I do want to say they are not under the umbrella of Sharia. Mm-hmm. They are not doing it under the... For example, even they are talking, for example, about Islamic feminism, Islamic mm-hmm. homosexuality, Islamic yeah. I mean, woman leading the men or something like that.
Yeah, as you rightly mentioned, they are not acting upon Sharia. The point is that for any Islamic law, you need to have a proof from the Quran, from the verses, from the... Sunnah of Sirah of the Muslims and intellect and so on and so forth. But when it comes to this issue, you cannot find any indication. So, as I mentioned, this is the effect of, as you mentioned and you put it, Islamic feminism.
That's right.
But the first point, so some may argue that then why? What is the wisdom behind this issue? Why a lady cannot lead the prayer?
IRIB English Radio presents Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Answering your theological questions in Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs. Send us your questions to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Praises to Allah, all glories to Allah,
we worship Allah and no one but Allah. The first point that I would like to share is that we should not think that leading a prayer is an advantage, the lack of which is an indication of a deficiency. Okay?
Yes.
So, my point is that in our time and era, only few men are going to lead the prayer. Can we say that the people who are not leading, I mean the men who are not leading the prayer, they are suffering from a deficiency, a problem? No. Mm-hmm. They do not have this opportunity.
Yes.
So in and of itself, not to be able to lead a prayer cannot be called a deficiency, a problem. Because sometimes the ladies, consider it a problem, a deficiency, so they try to take it back. I mean, take this so-called right and advantage back. This is not the case. إِنَّ أَكْرَمَكُمْ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ أَتْقَاكُمْ The most yes. honored of you before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the one who acts upon piety the most. So as I mentioned, the great, great majority of the men, Muslim men in our time, they are not leading any prayer. They
yes.
are not the imam for any Salatul Jamaha, for any Friday prayer.
Mm-hmm.
So is it a deficiency in them? No, of course not. So women should not consider it a deficiency.
Yes.
Now, for the wisdom for this, as it is clear from the verses and narrations about the concept of iffah and chastity,
yes.
this is a principle in the religion of Islam, that the chastity and the respect for the women should be observed by the men. And this chastity has different, indications, and it comes to leads to different Islamic laws. So why women are asked to, wear hijab? So this is based on the concept of chastity, for them not to be harassed by men, and for them not to, sexually speaking, provoke the men, and so on and so forth.
Yes.
So whatever we can think of the philosophy of hijab, somehow it applies here as well. Because if a woman is going to lead the prayer, it means that she's in front of
non-mahram men.
Non-mahram and, yes. And, I mean, non-mahram men.
Yes.
And, I mean, naturally speaking, it is, at least it is likely that some men are going to be distracted.
Yes.
I mean, during the prayer, we need to just pay attention to this act of worship. So it can be understood along with the philosophy of hijab and preserving the chastity of women. And it's very natural that, I mean, for protecting the chastity of women, Islam is requesting them to be behind the men and or with a curtain between men and women. And, I mean, when we think about the philosophy of hijab, one of them being not to provoke the men, sexually speaking, the same applies during the congregational prayer as well. And with the same philosophy, a woman cannot lead a prayer, and so that, I mean, she's not going to distract the men.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, this is the time for prayer, for spirituality. And when a man is leading the prayer, then, I mean, no one is going to be distracted. So, as I mentioned, again, I repeat that, first of all, what is told by these scholars is rooted in the narrations.
Yes.
And those people who, the minorities who nowadays, they are going to change, they need to explain why and for what reason they are acting against the Islamic laws. But the narrations are telling us that when it comes to mu'min being men or men and women, then the leader should be an imam. And yes. As I said, this is not referring to any deficiency, and it is for protecting the chastity of women.
Yes. So that's all right. Okay, so not in a way, for example, a woman must be selected as the leader of the imam. Even if the woman is the alima, I mean, in terms of the knowledge, she is higher than the man?
Yeah, as I mentioned, these Islamic laws are for all the cases, only in case the mu'min are, I mean, women, according to majority of the scholars, the leader can be a woman.
Yes.
But if they are men, and both men and women, then, as I mentioned, for the chastity of women, it doesn't make any difference if she's knowledgeable or not. She's not knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm.
For her chastity and for protecting the men, the leader should be a man.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min labani aliyin wa husayni wa hasan. لعلي وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسان لعلي وحسين وحسان كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في
Ali and Hussein and Hassan.
in the limelight.
As experts say, the surprise military operation launched by the Palestinian resistance recently has changed the regional equation in favor of the resistance axis and shattered the myth of the illegitimate Zionist regime's invincibility. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, the Operation Al-Aqsa Storm, launched by the Palestinian resistance group Hamas in the early hours of Saturday, October 7th, has sent shockwaves across the occupied territories, forcing settlers to run for their lives. According to Palestinian observers, the surprise military operation has changed the regional equation in favor of the resistance axis and shattered the myth of the illegitimate regime's invincibility. The Gaza-based Hamas resistance movement launched the aerial, sea, and ground attacks on the occupied Palestinian territories, including at least 5,000 rockets in the initial phase of the operation. The unprecedented Palestinian operation came in retaliation to the Israeli desecration of Al-Aqsa Mosque, as well as a series of assaults against women in the compound of the mosque. Late on Saturday, October 7th, less than 24 hours after the operation was launched, Israeli media confirmed that several Israeli soldiers and settlers were held by resistance fighters in the besieged Gaza Strip, including senior Israeli army generals. The death toll of Israelis has already crossed 300, according to the Israeli media. There have been more than 200 casualties on the Palestinian side as well from the regime's indiscriminate bombardment. Palestinian fighters and youth liberated several Israeli illegal settlements and seized jeeps, tanks, and jet fighters, while Zionist settlers were seen running away or hiding in shelters or even trash containers. Dr. Mohammad Halassa, an expert on Israeli regime affairs, in a conversation with the Press TV website, said the Al-Aqsa storm operation took the Israelis by surprise and delivered a real slap in their face. Halassa, who has been closely monitoring the developments, stated, up until this moment, analysts believe that the Israelis are still under immense shock and cannot contain the situation. This time, the Palestinians determined when and how the battle would unfold and take shape, while the Israelis entered an unprecedented state of chaos and panic, the university professor noted. He hastened to add, if the Israeli regime survives this battle, it will suffer a lot to recover from it and its psychological impact. These operations will for sure have repercussions on the Israeli internal situation and on the Israeli settler community as well. The internal Israeli arena is not the only variable to be affected by the battle, according to the expert. Halassa said, the unraveling events today and in the days to come, in light of the support expressed by Palestinian regional allies, will most probably change the equation of balance of power in the region. Touching on the status quo of the Israeli regime, he said the regime fears the expansion of confrontations and attacks on other areas of the occupied land and is living a real nightmare. He also pointed to Israeli regime fears of the Lebanese Hezbollah resistance movement on its northern borders, especially after the Lebanese resistance hailed the Al-Aqsa storm operation. The expert on Israeli affairs remarked in a conversation with the Press TV website, if Israel decides to escalate, we might witness an intervention from the Lebanese resistance or other resistance factions that support the Palestinian resistance, a scenario that Israel has been discussing for years now. Hezbollah on Saturday, October 7th, described the Al-Aqsa storm as a decisive response to the occupation's persistent crimes and violations and said it is closely monitoring the developments taking place. On Sunday morning, October 8, it claimed responsibility for attacks on three Israeli military sites. The statement read, "On the path to liberate what remains occupied of our Lebanese land, and in solidarity with the victorious Palestinian resistance, the struggling and patient Palestinian people, the martyr commander, Haj Emad Moghniyeh groups in the Islamic resistance attacked on this Sunday morning, October 8, 2023, three Zionist occupation sites in the occupied Sheba Farms region in Lebanon, namely the radar site, Zabdain site, and Rawai site, Al-Alam site, using a large number of artillery shells and guided missiles. Direct hits were confirmed on these sites." Palestinian political commentator and former detainee Ziad Hamouri told the Press TV website that the Al-Aqsa storm stands as a bureaucratic and security failure for the Israeli regime and proves that all the regime's institutions suffer a resounding failure, including the Shin Bet and Mossad. According to the Zionist regime media, the regime is used to initiating battles and believes it cannot be attacked. However, this illusion shattered in no time on Saturday and proved its disastrous failure and defeat. Hamouri explained that the scenario of being attacked has for long been elaborately discussed in Israeli media and intelligence, and over the years, all the emergency and police agencies of the Israeli regime have been trained for it, but they were all taken by surprise. For the first time in occupied Palestine's history, not only do we see the Palestinian young men roaming in the streets of liberated illegal settlements, but also we witness the harsh criticism of Israeli media and commentators against the Israeli regime and all its institutions. On Saturday, October 7th, Eli Marum, the former head of the Israeli Navy, appearing on live television, said all of Israel is asking itself, where is the IDF? Where is the police? Where is the security? Adding, it's a colossal failure. The hierarchies have simply failed with vast consequences. Hamouri told the Press TV website that the repercussions of today's Al-Aqsa storm battle exceed those of the 1973 October war, adding that it is not even comparable. He asserted, the Al-Aqsa storm battle is a huge multi-dimension victory which will impact not only Palestine, but the entire region, especially in light of statements made by some countries and resistance movements across West Asia. It will bring about a new equation and a new order in the region. For years, the Israeli regime committed crimes against the Palestinian people, demolished and confiscated their properties, and desecrated their sanctities, while its allies turned a blind eye to it. Today's battle is a natural response in the face of the Israeli regime's violations and savagery, which was eventually going to take place, according to Palestinian political analyst Anan Najib. Speaking to Press TV website from inside the occupied Palestinian territories, the analyst said that the events are only the tip of an iceberg. Najib told the Press TV website, the Palestinian people live under illegal occupation, struggle to stay alive, live daily violence, witness the demolition and confiscation of their homes, death of their relatives due to siege and lack of medicine, and painfully see the hunger spread among their innocent children and desecration of their sanctities. The battle was well prepared by the resistance fighters, he said, and maintained that the time has come for the Israeli regime to pay for its inhumanity and tremendous atrocities. Anon also pointed out the significant difference between the Palestinian community and the Israeli illegal settler community, saying it is the key to events unfolding. He noted, the Israeli community is made up of illegal settlers, the majority of whom obtain dual citizenship, unlike the Palestinian people, who are the indigenous people of this land. The Palestinians are willing to sacrifice themselves to defend their land, while several illegal settlers quickly left the Gaza settlements to further areas, speculating that these are safe havens. This alone explains the future of the Israeli regime and that it will soon one day stop to exist.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum and welcome, cherished listeners of IRIB English Radio, through a transformative experience. I'm Zainab, your host on Islamic upbringing. Let's embark on a journey into the depths of raising children in line with Islamic values. Our experts' answers are rooted in the noble Quran and the teachings of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Will illuminate your path. So today in our studio we have with us our guest speaker, Brother Miqdad. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, brother.
Thank you, and to all the listeners, inshallah, my salams to all of you.
So we have been talking about some of the very beautiful points, how to instill faith in your children. Brother Miqdad helped us with some of the very beautiful points. He said he'll be guiding us through seven beautiful points, and so far we have discussed 5 points. We said there should be a stable family life, number one. Number two, instill habits with patience and lenience. Number three, create strong Muslim identity. Number four, mosque centrality. Make your children active participants in the mosques. And number five, Brother Miqdad said, growing in knowledge. Create a thirst for knowledge in your children through different ways that we discussed in the previous episode, and also make them habitual of reading books and, in fact, listening to books, read out books for them. The connection with books should, in fact, be stronger than the connection they have with the mobile phones, the laptops, or other gadgets. So, Brother Miqdad, when we are talking about this fifth point, growing in knowledge, how does this further help in increasing the faith?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So, when we talk about faith, we mentioned that faith is very much related to knowledge. And so, the more we increase the knowledge in our children, the more the faith will become stronger. One of the very important things that we need to realize is that faith and strength in faith cannot be gained through blind imitation, or just, I am a Muslim and I believe just because my parents believed, or just because I've been growing up doing these things without understanding. So that does not negate the fact that we need to be part of a Muslim community, we need to have the identity, we need our parents to form a culture as well as habits that are very much ingrained with our religion. But with all of that should definitely come knowledge as well.
Right.
Because strength in faith and growth in faith cannot happen
overnight,
and cannot happen without this aspect of knowledge. See, children, if they don't understand why they believe and what they believe in, if they don't understand why do they do certain things, such as prayers, such as fasting, if they don't understand what is the purpose of, for example, Karbala and remembering Karbala, if they don't understand the different acts and the different things that are related to religion, then their faith will be weak. And then a little doubt or a little pressure, a peer pressure from outside will be enough to move them away from the religion.
Right.
So it is very important that when we talk about faith, we really work hard towards instilling a very strong understanding and realization in our children related to the religion.
Right. So as you really mentioned, it's very, very important to make them understand what they are doing and why they are doing, because we do have many people around the world who are Muslims just because their parents are Muslims. We have many teens who don't know why they belong to a particular community, why, like, many even don't know why do they do Azadari, why, what is the concept of Karbala. So you're saying that we as parents need to make enough efforts to make them help understand these things, give them enough knowledge to strengthen their faith. We'll talk more with you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
IRIB English Radio presents A Priceless Gift to Parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5-year-old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. Englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. We are with Brother Miqdad, and we're discussing some of the very beautiful points that those were creating a strong and stable family life, instilling habits with patience, lenience, and manners. Third, we said creating strong Muslim identity. Then we said mosque centrality, make them active participants in the behind the scenes of the mosque. And then we are talking about the fifth point, that is growing in knowledge. And Brother Miqdad said create a thirst of knowledge in them. And you can do that through different ways. Read out books for them. And now Brother Miqdad is helping us with more knowledge.
So we talked about this this idea that faith requires a strong understanding, especially when it comes to when children are faced with questions or even doubts. Right? We live in a world where through social media and through technology, our children are facing a lot of different thoughts, different ideas, different ideologies, people who are questioning pretty much everything.
Right.
Right? From God, from the concept of good and evil, from different things related to the human being and the divine and normal life, general life as well. And so children will be faced with these questions, will be faced with these doubts. We need to make sure that they are equipped with the right knowledge to be able to counter these doubts. So firstly, that doesn't mean that we create doubts in our children, right? Yes, doubt is a good tool, and it's a good step towards better knowledge or increased knowledge. Questioning certain things allows us to strengthen our understanding. However, we don't purposely create doubts in children. So this is the first point. Whenever we talk about doubts, and as they say in Arabic, shubuhat, these things should not be created in children. However, it's important to allow children to ask questions, to sometimes even challenge certain things, to doubt certain things. It's also okay for children to be in contact or to have access to sometimes individuals or people to who
do not belong to their faith.
Who don't belong to their faith, right? So to be able to open up their minds. However, this should be under control as well, right? Assuming the case that you, because what happens is that sometimes the wave of doubts and the wave of other thoughts will be so big that a child who is not equipped will just